All right, will C.J. Stroud play on Saturday against the Vikings? He was asked about that yesterday in his media availability. He wants to play. Here's what he had to say.
It's up to the coaches, you know, whatever they feel is, you know, suit for me. I like to be out there and, you know, get hit once or twice or whatever just to, you know, feel the emotion again. It's a little different than practice. But whatever, you know, D'Amico decides, and I'm good with that.
If you were D'Amico Ryans, would you play C.J. Stroud in the first team on Saturday against the Minnesota Vikings?
Oh, that's a tough question. I got to put myself in the brain of D'Amico and everything else.
That's probably a pretty fun place to live, actually.
I think probably less tempestuous than mine.
Yeah.
I think he probably would, yeah, in his heart he wants it. Well, he'd love to play everybody, but you got to balance out the injury risk.
Yeah.
I think I would want to just to, for the reason, every reason that CJ just said, but to start to get some of the timing down and to start to, CJ, get some reps, having command with an actual play clock in an environment where it really, really matters. It's like anything else you do in life, rehearsing a speech. It's just, it's going to be different when you're rehearsing the speech versus when you get out in front of an audience and you have that pressure.
Yeah.
Of, you and I know, when you try to record something, sometimes it takes like 20 shots when you're just recording it by
yourself.
Only
20 for me?
But yeah. when you have to do it live, you tend to do it better because of the pressure of it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think about that during training camp a lot. I'm like, yeah. I'm watching the offense. I'm like, you know what? I just think, like, in NRG Stadium on a Sunday,
yeah,
when the lights are on, it's going to be a little more crisp than we've seen in camp. So, and plus, you're not going against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson.
It's a different environment.
Yeah.
But they will be facing good pass rushers.
For sure.
The Vikings, I don't know how many of their starters on defense will play. They're playing J.J. Supposedly, according to the guy that we talked to last night here in West Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, we ran into a Vikings fan.
That's right.
And He was saying, because I haven't checked back with the Minnesota media on this, that J.J. McCarthy is going to play, but it's going to be with, by and large, the second-string offense. I wouldn't want to see that necessarily. If that is, in fact, the case, that guy was pretty drunk. But I'd like to see C.J. with 10 other guys that he's going to be playing with this year.
Yeah.
Going against a Brian Flores defense that – I think Brian Flores isn't the type of defensive coordinator that's going to go – plain vanilla defense in the playoffs. He wants to start doing all of his disguised coverages and everything else like that. So it's a good challenge, and it's against a team that the Texans really struggled against last year. What, you know, the biggest thing that I remember from the Vikings game last year was the 4 straight pre-snap penalties,
yeah,
by the offensive line.
Me too.
It was not a clean operation. The thing that I want this year, before anything else, is good, fundamentally sound offensive football in a clean operation. So if you could exercise some demons just by going into that stadium and looking like you actually know what the hell you're doing,
yeah.
I like that.
You said this to Clint and Ron yesterday, and I tend to agree with this. Like, even if you send CJ in there and he's just handing the ball off and you're running the ball,
yeah.
Because here's the thing, you're trying to work on your run game right now too.
Yeah.
There's plenty to work on for this offense. This offense needs reps in live football games. So I hope they play at least the requisite, you know, 2 series that you usually see the ones in a game like this. The only thing I'm fearful of is if all CJ does is go in and hand the ball off, that we're going to come in on Monday to a slew of texts about how CJ's shoulder is screaming right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if he doesn't throw the ball,
yeah,
at all.
So be it. I'm glad you said that, because I might have been one of those people. I'd be calling in to our show.
Like, let's go to Seth on a mobile.
Seth on a mobile in Pearland. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I'm glad you said that, honestly, because yeah. I would have thought that, because I had forgotten. I had told Clint, yeah, if he goes in and just hands the ball off, because the big challenge for CJ right now is not about learning how to be an NFL quarterback or anything. He's done that over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. It's the pre-snap operation. That's what's different for him. He's got more at his command, but more things to think about and worry about. So even if it were for 12 straight runs, he's got to come up to the line. He's got to ID everything on the defense that he's looking at. He might have to make some adjustments. And really, as most young quarterbacks start to learn over the course of their career, the quarterback being in command of the run game is just as important. If you want to be a top-tier Hall of Fame caliber dude, you got to care as much about the run game as you do about the pass game. That's not your – you're not in charge of the off. You're not in charge of the passing offense. You're in charge of the offense. That's why Tom Brady was genuinely 100% cool with some of those games where they would hand the ball off 40 times.
They're trying to win.
That's the right thing to do. It's not about your ego. It's not about your passing numbers or anything. So the pre-snap operation, him getting up to the line of scrimmage, making the right calls, anticipating what the defense is going to do, you can get that action, but without necessarily putting CJ in harm's way.
Okay, so this is the second offense that CJ's had to learn since coming into the NFL. Obviously, his rookie year, he comes in, he's learning Bobby Slowick's offense. He was asked yesterday to compare this training camp, learning a new offense, to his rookie year.
Yeah, it's a little different just because, like, I know, like, more coverages. I know, like, style, trees. I know coordinators. You know, I played against a good amount of, you know, different schemes. So it's a little easier. And then, you know, it's a lot of similarities from what Nick's bringing to what we're doing in the past. So it's a little similar in those lights, but it's not as hard as my rookie year was, like learning Chinese. This year is a little bit of that, but not as much. It's a little easier.
It's more like French. Yeah. You know, at least it's the same alphabet, you know.
What's the easiest language to learn?
For me, it's been English.
English is kind of a pain in the
No, it is. It's not the same as all those other European languages. Like, Spanish and French kind of look alike a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
The words are somewhat similar.
Yeah. I struggle with the English at times.
I struggle with all of them.
I think that when he starts talking about the coverages and the style routes,
yeah. Style trees.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. There is that too. You know, there's one thing when you learn coverages while you're playing Madden, and there's the textbook. Hey, this is cover two. This is cover three. But then you start to learn that. Oh, okay. Every defensive coordinator runs it a little bit differently. Cover three isn't always cover three. You know, it just looks different from team to team.
Yep.
And then I remember Kyle Shanahan talking about this a long time ago. I was actually just kind of sitting and listening to a conversation he was having with the Texans. But about that, it's also really important to remember that you got to know the guys that don't necessarily play it the right way. You can be a really smart quarterback. And this is, I think, sometimes where guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick, the super intelligent dudes, sometimes get themselves in trouble.
Yeah.
Because you know the way the cornerback should be playing, but you got to really also factor in, okay, but what about when he's playing it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
That you did, like, you could throw an interception because you think you know how it's going to look, but you got to know that, oh, no, but that guy plays it a little bit wrong or differently or whatever it is. Those are the little nuances that – It's like every step of the way, even as you think you've started to get some command of things, you realize, oh, wait, no, it's every step becomes that much more complex. There's mm-hmm. that much more to know. But also, by the way, you learned Mandarin Chinese. Now you got to learn Cantonese Chinese.
Yeah, different dialects, yes. Last one here from C.J. Stroud. His body language, I guess, was a big topic yesterday. He was asked about his efforts to improve his body language.
I don't know. It's hard. I'm very competitive. I don't like losing. I don't like making mistakes. But I would say I just, you know, in those moments, I just breathe, relax, try to just calm my mind and, you know, just trying to just find something positive. Like, I always try to remind myself, like, this is cool. Like, I'm in the NFL, you know, like, you know, I don't, like, God didn't have to bless me with this, but he chose to, and I got to steward it the right way. And I don't think, like, I can complain every day if I really wanted to, but, like, there's no positive in that. So I try to just try that and just be grateful for the little things. And even though they're not little, they're huge, they're big. Like, I woke up this morning, you know, and I'm able-minded, able-bodied, and I'm just blessed to have that. So I would say that helps me be more positive and have better body language.
There's a psychological theory, Sean, about leadership, that a lot of the great leaders actually kind of, no matter how many books and autobiographies you read where, you know, billionaires try to present themselves in the best light, there's just a little touch on the depression side. Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., all those guys, they really struggled at times. Like, they would get, they would feel such a great responsibility, and they take it very, very seriously.
That's CJ.
That they would get kind of morose at times, you know, and you got, so it can be a positive.
Are we seeing that with CJ Stroud?
I don't know. Who the hell knows? I think he cares. Like,
he talked about his responsibility that,
yes,
he feels.
It's the curse of really, really caring.
Yeah.
So, and the people that are like the toxically positive people, they're like, hey, no, everything's great all the time. It's awesome. They can wear on you a little bit.
A little
you
bit.
Know?
Yeah.
So it's always about finding that balance. I think CJ takes it really, really seriously. And I think there's times where, yeah, like you, part of his process and his maturation is that sometimes you got to learn that, okay, it's okay to let things go. And it's okay, to, and it's my responsibility to let things go.
Yeah.
That it's not that, okay, me caring doesn't release me from also having to be the guy that is moving forward and letting everybody else see that we're moving forward, even though yep. I just made a mistake.
Okay, it's a good segue.
I'd be awful. You know, like, if, as a quarterback, oh, I'd be the you? Worst.
Yeah.
The worst, because I hate myself so much after I make mistakes. You got to be a little bit, you got to find that balance of just like, okay, yeah, I made a mistake. I'm moving on, all right?
You don't have the requisite short memory on a mistake like that a quarterback
no,
needs
to? No, I think about it for 17 years. And I think about how I let everybody down.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's a big, and that's the biggest thing. I could see that with CJ. I think it's not that he, you know, is embarrassed or anything and he made a mistake. It's that you feel like you let everybody down. So you got to figure yeah. out a way to move past that.
All right.
That's
so,
why I was just, that's why I never made it as a quarterback, Sean.
Okay, so.
Despite every year me walking into Dom Capers' office yeah. and saying, damn it, coach.
Put in a few plays
You don't
me.
Give me a few snaps at quarterback.
Yep.
And he'd be like, Seth, your attitude just isn't right.
You care too much,
yes,
Seth.
Yes, yes, yeah. yeah.
Speaking of caring too much, I have a question for the audience, and it is, how long do you wait when you think somebody might be missing before you call the authorities?
Because Sean was a little bit worried about
I was worried
night.
About Seth last night, so we had a media dinner last night at the Jerry West Steakhouse here at the Greenbrier, so all the requisite media members, everybody who you guys follow, there's about 15 or 20 of us with the Texan staff there, beautiful, nice steak dinner, and then we left about 9:30 or so. You and I are in separate cars because, you know, sometimes I go back to the yeah. house, sometimes you go back. We're in separate cars. So you wanted to go back to the house. Yeah. I was going to stop at this watering hole I found.
Yeah. And we stopped at a bar. I was drinking a water.
Yep. I'd
had 2/3 of a glass of wine at
right.
dinner.
Yep.
Like, I felt good because I knew I was tired and I needed to get some sleep. So I'm sitting there having my water at the bar, and I grab the key. We have one key for the house.
We have one key. It's not it's not one of those push button security. Yeah. Like, it's not. It ain't advanced.
So
it's literally a key.
Right. So I've got yeah. one key, and I take it because I'm going home
yep.
first, and you're going to be following me.
And you're just going to leave the door unlocked
yeah.
for me. Yeah.
And then you fast forward 7 or 8 minutes later. You get to the house.
And you're not there.
And I'm not there.
You're not there.
Yeah.
And
it's dark out, everybody.
It is dark, dark. Yeah.
yeah.
And so I go to the front door. It's locked. Obviously, we locked it. I'm like, maybe we happen to leave the back door open.
Yeah.
Back door's locked. And then so now I'm waiting like 10 minutes or so, and there's no Seth. And you should have
no
been.
And there's no cell reception. Once you get out of the village here, because of these all these mountains and everything, there's no cell reception
I can't
whatsoever.
Make a phone call to find
yeah.
you. There's no, I can't make a phone call.
If I could have texted you, I'd have said, Sean, enable Wi-Fi calling on your phone.
Right, right,
right. You did have access to that. But for all intents and purposes, you in that moment, you didn't know how to get a hold of me.
I didn't know how to get a hold of
yeah.
you. So I get in my car and drive back into town, 10 minutes back into town,
yeah.
just so I can make a phone call
yeah.
to call you. And so I call you, it goes to voicemail, I leave you a message, I'm texting, it's going,
yeah.
and as
so
it turns out.
What had happened was,
yeah.
I was thinking about some things, and
you missed the turn.
And I hadn't turned my GPS on while I still had cell phone service.
Right.
So I got to a point where all of a sudden I realized, like, I'm in a state park.
Yeah, you almost got to Pennsylvania.
I never drove through a state park on the way back to the
right.
place again. And so I turned around and
you overshot it by a good amount.
I overshot it by a good because once I realized, like, I think I'd gone too far, I was like, all right, I'm going to clock myself because I think it takes about 5 minutes. I didn't know if I'd been out of town for 1 minute or 30 minutes.
Right.
I was deep in thought. And but I knew that you were probably panicking and I felt awful about it.
I was panicking
yeah.
a little bit and I went back into town. So when my texts aren't going through, I'm getting your voicemail. And here's the other thing. You were tired.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
dark out. It's super dark.
Yeah.
There's no lights. And I thought, man, this is like one of those hotel rooms where you got those special shades that don't let the sunlight
yeah.
in. I was worried you drove into a ditch or something like that.
Yeah.
So the whole process started about 9:30 or 9:45.
Uh-huh.
By the time I was panicked looking for you, it's probably about 10:15 or so, maybe.
Oh, wow.
10:20?
Is that long?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the process of the two of us
yeah,
sort of leaving the bar.
No, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
No, it was like 10:15. It was
maybe
10...
like 45 minutes since you'd seen me.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm like, man, at what point do I make a phone call
right.
to the authorities to go, hey man, my friend is missing. I'm literally wondering, because I've never been in that situation before.
Yeah.
Like, what is the etiquette there? Like, well, how long do I wait before I – now, granted, the town that we're in here, White Sulphur Springs, the police here would probably welcome a phone call like that because they're bored stiff playing Monopoly or something at the police station.
And it's a town that's driven by tourism.
Yeah.
So they're kind of – they bend over backwards. A lot of times cops in small mountain towns like these, they almost feel like – they're half cop, half like tourism board.
Yeah, yeah.
So they probably would have just sent somebody down the road just to be sure there was nobody off the road or
something. Right, right, right.
So, but then you also, in the back of your mind, and you always feel guilty about this, you're like, it's likely no big deal, and it's going to be really embarrassing. after the two city slickers from Houston, Texas.
You know what? Yes. Yeah. General, yes. But I thought, like, just given the time of night it was and you know, we've been getting up super early, you know, and it was kind of late and it was dark outside. I was like,
and you could have I wouldn't have minded if you had been honest with a cop and being like, this guy's a little off.
Oh, I definitely would have been that. Yeah, I would have said that. I'm not going to make myself look like an idiot in this thing.
We don't usually let him drive on these trips. Because we just don't quite trust that he can get to where he needs to go.
Yeah. So y'all didn't learn the lesson from the whole one key thing from the Super Bowl trip, LOL.
Oh, yeah.
Do we have
a
key issue at the Super Bowl?
No, you had a parking pass issue because Clint had the parking pass.
Oh, that was that turned into something. Yeah.
Where you almost broke in Clint's wife's window to grab the
crowbar.
Parking pass off
his desk. It was sitting right there on the dashboard. Yeah.
It really wasn't a big deal. It ended up not being a big deal. It's so weird, though, because we grew up in an era where there were no cell phones.
Yeah.
Like, I had one friend whose dad had a cell phone, and it was the size of, like, the nuclear suitcase
I had a bag phone.
Yeah, and that was, like, when I was in high school, maybe. That was the one cell phone that I knew of.
Yep, that
would have been. And he wouldn't have been able to get reception up here. But it's just, it's crazy how incapable a lot of us have become when operating without a cell phone, at least when you're used to dealing with it.
Yeah.
So I just say, like, I couldn't make a 4-minute trip outside of town without my GPS or cell phone without it becoming kind of a big deal.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Bunch of punks.
All right. Would it have been, okay, so it was probably under an hour. Would that have been appropriate for me to call the authorities to say, where's my missing my friend Seth? And I would have been crying like a baby. My friend Seth, I'm missing my friend Seth. So what's the appropriate amount of time?
I've abandoned my boy. I abandoned my boy.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll do some headlines coming up next. We'll dig deeper into the Astros. Hey, we got some hot Thursday night action, a little football going on tonight. We'll get you set up for that as well, give you everything going on here at Texans training camp today. We'll do that coming up next.